Greetings, fellow investigators, and welcome back to our video podcast, Into the Darkness, where my friends and I play the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I'm your host, Tom Rayleigh. This is episode 46 of Horror on the Orient Express. Jeff Wilkins will be giving our recap, so let's start. The players are ready. Let's begin our journey into the darkness. Jeff?
Thanks, Tom. In our last episode, our group finds themselves asleep on board the Orient Express, which means they have once again entered into the Dreamlands. We're approaching the city of Thalarion, and as we're finishing dinner, the Sarnathians and the Ibians have recruited the help of Eldritch and Dr. Dawkins to help negotiate reparations between the two races. Eldritch has agreed to hear and represent the side of the Sarnathians, and Dr. Dawkins represents the Ibians. After listening to their concerns, the Ibians request three things: 10,000 rubies, the king to apologize publicly, and a religious statue called Bokra. We agree to have the meeting between the two parties the next morning. We arrive in Thalarion, and when we're stopped at the platform, Henry tries to stop a creature, for lack of a better word, from boarding the train. The creature seems to take control of Henry. He starts to walk up the platform. Dr. Dawkins bravely steps up with his sword and blocks the creature from approaching. The creature is the same one that has taken over Boromir. After Dr. Dawkins stood up to it and Henry denied it passage, it summoned a flying creature, a Byaki, that lands and takes the creature away. This creature is also the same evil sorcerer that is involved with Madame Bonneval. Speaking of Madame Bonneval, Dr. Keith has a private meeting with her and seems a bit distant from the group. During the encounter with the creature, Dr. Keith and Madame Bonneval were watching from the lounge area. The train then leaves around midnight. Henry settles down and tells us about the sorcerer, that he was once a man that boarded the train. But when he got to the Gulf of Nodens, the man threw his humanity into the gulf and became the creature. Upon the creature's leaving, it seems that Boromir is no longer under its control, but that he shall remain below deck since he's not 100% certain. The next morning arrives, and the negotiation between the Sarnathians and the Ibians goes fairly well. The final agreement was that the Sarnathians would give them 20,000 rubies as a show of good faith, and they have agreed to see if they can return the statue of Bokra, though no real promises were made. It did seem sincere, though. Rupert is approached by a female Sarnathian when he's alone. They attempt to bribe him with jewels to kill the Ibians. When Rupert returns, he pulls Dr. Dawkins to the side and tells him of the offer and that the Ibians might be in danger. Dr. Dawkins points out that supposedly no one can be killed while on board the train, but then quickly remembers that that isn't always the case. Dr. Dawkins then finds Henry to alert him of this new development. And that brings us up to date.
Oh, monsieur, what an accusation, but I am perfectly, I'm quite not surprised, the Sarnathians.
Well, I was quite surprised myself.
Just an accusation for now, but I would like to keep the Ibians safe, so if there's any other sort of measures you can place on their area.
I will speak, of course, with the Sarnathians and tell them that such dealings will not be allowed aboard my train, whether they are true or not. Mm-hmm. We will be arriving in Aira in a few hours. Please enjoy yourselves. We are still in the land of Zura, but we'll soon be leaving it and going into the land of Aira. At which time you will notice, because I will come along, I will open up the windows. So he goes back about his business. What would you guys like to do, if anything?
I would like to get out of these politics, if possible.
Well, you don't have to be in them right now.
Well, it's different drink. I wasn't expecting him to be hired as an assassin.
If you guys are you guys like going back to the lounge? You probably spend a lot of time in the lounge.
Yes.
That seems like the best.
I'll grab a brandy as well and a cigar.
Okay.
Yes.
You notice when you were there that Mac McKenzie is sitting there next to the fireplace. He seems to be fiddling with a bunch of paperwork. Karakov is also sitting there. Seems to be sort of musing to himself. He looks like he's conflicted, you know. He doesn't look particularly happy, but he looks pensive. He's thinking. But he's not like reading a book or anything. He's just sort of sitting there.
Evening.
What the deal? Not going as you planned?
Well, I don't think there's going to be any kind of weapon deal, but you know, I'll be glad when this trip is over. And McKenzie like looks up at you all and then starts packing his stuff back into his suitcase, into his briefcase, the one that's chained to his arm. And he says, I have a lot of paperwork to do when I get back to the land of the living.
I thought this is one of those things you were trying to get rid of.
Is the reason? Well, I don't know. You know, it's a heavy responsibility I have. People depend on me.
Well, if you don't mind me asking, do you have any children who can carry your legacy in the real world?
I have quite a large family, but I don't always have time for them because I'm too busy all the time. I do a lot of traveling. I do a lot of paperwork for people, making sure all of their P's and Q's are in the right spots.
Well, maybe perhaps it's time to pass it on to younger hands, and you can take the time to relax and actually go up this.
It's just a job. It's not something I could pass on to my children. You have to go to school for this sort of thing, and I doubt any of them are really that interested in doing this sort of thing.
Well, you never know. Have you talked to any of your children? You did say that you've been away, you know, on business a lot.
Quite honestly, I'd rather nobody be burdened with this kind of boring crap. But you know what? Pays the bills.
The curse of the working man. The curse of every man. Bills and tax.
Well, is it safe to assume that you're an accountant or a lawyer of some sort, McKenzie?
Diplomat.
Oh, diplomat, eh?
Well, we should have had you involved with these politic discussions.
Ah. Quite. I'm not interested in anything the Sarnathians or the Ibians have to say. Quite honestly, I can't stand the Ibians. They're not bad people, but they don't smell very nice.
Well, things were resolved peacefully, so I call that a win.
You guys noticed something odd. Maybe it's not odd. You guys have understood now in the Dreamlands that thought processes tend to manifest themselves in ways. You suddenly realize that McKenzie is sitting in a clutter of papers, you know, things that he's worked on, things that he's crunched up and thrown away, and he seems both organized and disorganized. In his immediate vicinity, he's somewhat organized, but all around him, there's disorganization. He doesn't have time to pay attention to the extraneous details, just whatever he's working on. But yeah, as you guys recall, when you went to his room, it seemed like all the furniture had been shoved to one side and jammed in the fireplace, of all things. You also notice Karakov, every once in a while flinches and looks out the window, or looks towards the windows like he's hearing something.
I remember
you've seen the behavior. You've seen the behavior in him before.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to be quite nutty, doesn't it?
Haunted, perhaps.
What about what's her name, Zusha?
Zusha comes in, and she's being her sweet usual self. She also seems a little pensive because she knows that soon she's going to give up her dream. Hmm. At least that's what her original intention was before, until you talked to her a little bit about it. Psychologically, she comes across to you as somebody who at the same time puts on a face that she's sweet and happy and wonderful, but you know that there's a darkness back there behind her eyes that she's seriously considering a life change, that is basically giving up everything that she really loves to do because she's not very good at it.
Again, there's ways around that. Well, what I'll do is, but she seems to be happy. So, I would invite her over, to join us for drinks. And
okay, certainly she does. She's like, oh, I'll be glad when we're out of this area. And I can open up the windows again. I can smell and you all can sort of smell like that carnal
meat packing.
Yeah, meat packing plant sort of smell outside.
I just thought of something. And I'm not sure if I want to ask this to the GM or to Karakov. Let me ask the GM first, and then you can direct me if as needed. I just realized, so we can't necessarily have weapons like handguns or something like that. Like, we can have simple weapons like swords and daggers.
Right.
Is that a rule of Henry's? Is that only on the train?
No, that's more or less, the Dreamlands is about 400 years behind.
Okay.
And the only reason is because it's generated by human dreams, and it takes a while for them to sort of build up enough energy to create something. That's why the train is not mechanical. He couldn't build a mechanical train, so he sort of improvised with the things that he could, creatures and pavilions and stuff like that. But yeah, so you can have things that were around 400 years ago or so.
So then I'll turn to Karakov and I'll say, so you were interested in maybe getting involved with the weapons between the Sarnathians and the Ibians. Is there a benefit to, like, is that something that you would personally benefit from here in the Dreamlands?
Well, they have their own currency here in the Dreamlands. It's not the first time that I've been here before. I think I came here originally on the Orient Express a long time ago, maybe in my life, maybe for 20 years or so I've been coming here. But since then I have found other ways into the Dreamlands. When I was younger, it was drugs. But there are certain mental disciplines that one can practice to find one's way into the Dreamlands again. It's always near Uther for some reason. I don't know why. Especially if my intention is to ride on the train. But like I say, they have their own currency here. Now, the question is really whether the Sarnathians and the Ibians, they're denizens of the Dreamlands. So they have their own ways of doing things. It's something that I looked into, but, you know, I would have to open up whole new markets of types of weapons, whether they are spears or swords or crossbows or whatever. But I don't know. I'm very tired of this. I'm very tired of this whole thing. I just want to... I want to not feel... I want to throw it all away into the Gulf of Nodens. Yeah, so that I can have some peace.
I was a little surprised to hear you talk in that way, because that's what last time we talked, you seemed like you had your mind made up to not be involved with that sort of thing anymore. Just old habits, hard to give up.
It is hard when you live in a life, the life of luxury. I am probably one of the richest men in the Slavic states because of my deeds. I have never been a religious man, but you know, I live in a culture that is religious, and perhaps there is something to be said of it.
Do you know Mackenzie back in the real world?
I don't remember if I ever said that I did, but
okay.
No, not necessarily. I can't remember if I, it's not part of the story, so.
Okay.
And he says it's just a matter of, and he suddenly turns. You hear that?
Okay, I'll jump.
It sounds like a bomb going off nearby. Yes?
I don't think I heard anything myself, old chap.
I'll try to catch Rupert's eye and be like, I'll tell you later.
Like cannon fodder, like somebody is shooting a cannon in the distance.
Oh, I know what you mean. Young guy in my squadron had something like that.
You can hear it?
Not personally, but I'll take your word for it. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I just didn't hear it personally, but I am a bit deaf.
It is constant. It's all the time I hear this. I know that it is probably just the spirits of the people who have died because of my actions. I would like them to stop.
Oh, I know that feeling well.
I don't want to hear them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Who out of Mac and Karakov looks the more, what's the word? Adventurous? Brave?
Adventurous?
Yeah.
Karakov.
Okay. Karakov, I have another question for you.
Of course.
The whole time that we've been aboard the Dreamland Express, we keep arriving at these different towns or cities.
Yes. And we're
basically being told to not get off. Or if we do get off, to just not go far from the train. I'm curious, have you ever explored any of these other cities?
Oh, the ones that, like Celarion and places like that, no. I understand what Henry is telling us. They are dangerous places. People who go there don't come back. But we are leaving that area now. We are going into, once we are past Zura, pretty much we are in the Golden Lands. We always stop at Airath, but there's nothing there. It's Henry is sentimental. After that, we have Sonanil and Salah and Saranian, which are glorious cities, beautiful. Though I'd be you don't want to decide to move into Sonanil.
Why is that?
Because it's perfect. And people who move there decide they don't want to leave. And that is a good thing. It was a good place to retire eventually in your life. The problem is that if you decide you'd like to leave, you're going to probably be cursed some way, because when you leave perfection, the gods are not happy with that. You have decided to snub their beauty and their perfection. And most people don't do that. In any case, the curse is that you will never be able to find it again. Once you have found the perfection, you can't ever find it again. But do you hear that? It sounds like gunshots.
So we should avoid this place. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I mean, we will be stopping there. The king will get on, I'm sure, in Sun Anil. And he will ride on the train until we get to Saranian. But, you can look around. Just don't decide that you're going to stay there. And it will be difficult because it is very beautiful.
The Golfin Nones is in Sarania, or
no,
is
that it's beyond that.
Okay.
There I have never been to, but I am going this time.
So should a person choose, well, we have this travel time on board the Dreamers to decide whether or not we're going to actually go through with throwing our totems into the Gulf. Is Saranian basically the last stop to change your mind?
That is correct. That's what it says on your ticket.
Okay.
Of course, that is the best part of the whole trip, is flying to Saranian, because it is a cloud city. It's halfway between the sky and the land.
You say fly?
Well, jump. We when we get to Sun Anil, they're the crystal headlands. We will run out onto those, and the entire train will make a leap into the air, and we shall leap all the way to Saranian.
Wow. Wasn't expecting that. Welcome to the Dreamlands.
Hey, the viewers told
us. That would be a hell of a shock, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It is quite a spectacular jump.
Something to look forward to, Anthony. Not since we flew anyway.
Is anybody else tempted to look out?
No.
On Zora?
Are you?
Zora.
I am tempted.
Go ahead. Go for it.
Get thee behind me.
Oh. You're the one who decided to do it. I said no. You wanted to do it. So I said, go ahead. It's all right. We'll take care of you. We'll put you into Arkham Asylum once you're
done. Could it hurt, really, right? We're aboard the Dreamland Express.
What could it hurt? Yeah, go for it. Try it out.
We'll put you back.
We'll see what it can hurt. Yeah, you'll be all right. We'll take care of you.
We won't let you marry her. That's what you're worried about. If you've mentioned anything to do with marriage, we'll lock you out and tie you up.
Yeah, I don't know if Elizabeth would be too happy with that, with me. It's tempting. I'll think about it.
The more you think, the worse it's going to be.
Elizabeth, are you there with them?
Yes, I believe I am, yes.
Okay, you're all there together.
I don't want to set the wind on fire.
You also have noticed something else interesting, and that's the more that that Mackenzie talks about his job and his responsibilities, the bigger the briefcase seems to get. You're not sure if it's actually changing in size, but it seems heavier the more he talks about it.
I will try to steer the conversation away from work and ask him some personal stuff. Something to lighten up his mood, maybe.
Cards. Game of cards.
Oh, you really want to play cards? That sounds like a good job. I like to play cards.
What's your game?
What
game do you
play? Does anyone play Go Johnny Go 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 Go?
I don't know that game.
You could teach us, Keith, if it's easy.
Is it like Fizbash?
Is it like Crazy Russian Eights?
I don't know that one. It must be a Russian game.
I like Gin Rummy very much.
Bridge.
Bridge. Yeah, how about Bridge?
Perhaps Canasta.
I'm afraid I don't know how to play either one of those.
You really must learn Bridge.
It's Blackjack. It's
very much a thinker's game.
Blackjack is more of a gambler's game. It's not really a party game. There's poker.
But poker's that's also more of a gambling game, really, isn't it?
I couldn't see
can't really play poker unless you're prepared to gamble. Poker.
How about Go Fish?
I tell you what, you teach us how to play Crazy Eights. We learn from you.
Okay.
What about McKenzie? Is McKenzie getting in on us? That's what
I McKenzie's like, all right, I'll play some cards too. That would work.
Yeah, come on. There's plenty of room for everybody.
All right. So we'll just say that you guys play some cards for a while. And after about a half an hour or so, you notice some commotion. And Henry comes in and starts opening up the windows and putting out the candles. And when he raises the blinds on the windows.
Nearly there, Henry?
What's that?
We nearly there, are we, Henry?
Yes, monsieur, we will be arriving within a half an hour. And as he opens it up, you can see just sort of out the windows that behind you in that direction, there's kind of a dark mist and a gloominess. But the sunlight is broken through above. The sun is shining down. The fields outside are green. There are hills. There's groves of trees. There's pretty little temples and buildings on the hills. And it becomes very pastoral, very beautiful. There's obviously ranches with people herding some sort of odd-looking animals. There's flowers planted around the perimeters of these farms, and it's actually starting to look very, very pretty, and the air is sweet.
Absolutely beautiful, isn't it?
Nice to have some scenery for a change.
At a certain point, the train seems to sort of turn. It moves towards the hills and it goes into a valley. Mm-hmm. And the air in the valley is very sweet, and there don't seem to be any inhabitants here. But eventually you come to a place right in the bottom of a valley, and the train comes to a halt. Outside the train is what looks like it might have at one time been a platform, but now it's just basically a large slab. There's no covering over it or anything like that. There's still a spot in it where Henry can retract a ramp going down to it.
I'm going to go to the door and have a cigarette. So
and there are fields spread out in between the hills that are just filled with wildflowers, most of them red. And off in the distance, there's just a large open field with trees out there and surrounding things and birds and butterflies. And there's just a big chunk of rock, maybe a piece of a pillar or something that's kind of just out there in the middle. And Henry comes into the lounge and he says, ladies and gentlemen, we have arrived in Ira. We will be here for 2 hours. You are welcome to walk around. I come here simply to pay my respects. Relax, enjoy yourselves. It's very beautiful here. And he then goes out.
Refreshments or something like that.
I didn't quite get that, Simon.
I'm going to have a cigarette, walk on the platform, see if I can find anywhere that sells refreshments.
Okay. There's no buildings. There's no people here.
We'll go back to the Calvin.
But it's very, very, very beautiful outside. The hills are in various colors of wildflowers growing on them. There's trees that have blossoms on them that are slowly, you know, wafting in the light.
And, perfect weather for a game of cricket.
Absolutely perfect. Perfect weather. The sun is shining. It's right about noon. Before he leaves, Henry goes over to Dr. Dawkins, and he says, "Monsieur, the cats of Utha have decided that this would be a good place for them to bury the baby ghost, and they invite you to be with them. Of course, you are all invited if you so choose." And Henry leaves. He goes out onto the platform. What he always
does. I've got a dog for support, but if you want me to go, I'd go. But if you don't feel I'm intruding.
I'll tell you guys. You guys can explore the city.
There's no city. It's just a field.
explore the field. The city of flowers.
I'll go with you. I'll inspect it. I'll watch it from a cultural point of view and pay my respects.
All right. So, are you guys going to go outside?
Well, I am. I'm going to the funeral or the burial.
So as you leave the lounge and you move on to the observation area, Henry is there rather solemnly, and you can see there is a contingency of cats that are with him, but also the other gangway on the platform has been lowered, and the cats are all lined up, and they're also going down into the field. Their own little walkway down.
Do they wish us to be pallbearers?
No, they're actually carrying the body themselves on their backs. Henry very solemnly walks down to the big slab, and you can tell that at one time, maybe a long, long, long time ago, this was a platform, a train platform, but it hasn't been for a long time. It's worn down. And Henry goes across the platform and down the little, what's left of the little stairs, and he walks out into the field where there is this column of rock. And he stands there for a few moments, and he removes his hat and bows and, you can't see, he's far enough away, but he's obviously there. Okay. Dr. Dawkins, you can see that the cats are almost in procession, two by two. They have Ghost's body borne on their backs, and his parents are following right behind. And they are moving out into the field towards the stone as well. The field is filled with beautiful red, like asters or poppies or something like that, you know, and little white star flowers all over. It's quite spectacular. So are you guys following?
Yes, yeah. All right. I've got my hat in my hands and I look suitably awkward.
Mm-hmm. Slowly and reverently.
So when you finally arrive at this big rock, you can see that there is an inscription written on the rock. And we'll get to that in a moment. But the cats find a soft spot in the grass, and they've managed to flatten out the grass, and with their little claws, they dig a grave and very solemnly place a ghost's body in it and then cover it up. But Henry is standing here staring at the slab, and this is what it looks like.
Here once stood Ira, city of golden domes, the dream of the shepherd boy Iranon. As long as Iranon sought Ira, he remained forever young, and for that long Ira flourished and prospered. But when Iranon lost hope, he grew old overnight and walked into the Banazic quicksands. That night, Ira and all her people vanished. O dreamers, hold fast your dreams, lest they too perish.
That is all that is left of the city of Iranon.
I say, it's like Carthage, totally disappeared.
The truth is, nobody can even get to this spot except by my train. And I come here because I hope that if we continue to remember, that perhaps one day the city will return and all her people.
The puppies remind me of Flanders. You used to fly over Flanders and you see all the fields of puppies.
In any case, he makes a bow and then he returns to the train. The cat's very ghost. And I mean, there's not any words that they're cats, but there's definitely a whole solemnity about the whole thing. And after that, you know, you're free to sort of wander around in the field. If you have lost any sanity, you may, you know, roll a six-sided dice and return that to your numbers.
I was hoping it'd be something like that. I got two.
I'm relatively mentally well at the moment.
I would actually like to take Zusha out here to show her this slab if she hasn't seen it before.
She's with you. Everybody came with you except Madame Bonneval and the Ibians. The Sarnathians are in kind of the background, but they're kind of, I don't know, they're not as impressed, you know.
They look bored.
So that's a bit.
Well, I show that to Zusha, and I tell her to remember this when you're thinking about giving up your dream of being an entertainer, a dancer.
Oh, but it's so difficult. Here my talent comes naturally, but there you really have to work for it.
Yeah.
But she listens to you, and she seems contemplative about the whole thing, not to give up your dreams. In any case, unless you guys would like to do something, you're going to spend about 2 hours here.
Okay. Is there anything else of interest in this area?
Well, you could say everything is of interest. It's all beautiful.
It's all very relaxing, isn't it?
You find a place in the grass where there are strange little mouse-like creatures with feathered tails that are just hopping around in the grass, seem to be playing, and the cats don't seem to be bothering them. There are herds occasionally of strange deer-like creature that walk through the woods, and they don't seem to be skittish at all. They're just quietly minding their own. Butterflies and occasional rainbow lizards and things like that. It's a very, very, very beautiful place. Very peaceful. There's actually around sort of down the valley a little ways, you can see there's a big waterfall that's pouring into a cool pond, and it's all very, very, very beautiful and relaxing.
How far away is that? Could we reach it and get back in time?
Probably. It's probably just 5 minutes walk.
I'm going to go for a swim.
Sounds like a great idea.
I guess I'll join you.
I'm going to go back and find my swimming costume and a towel.
And I feel like this is a bit of foreshadowing the calm before the storm sort of a thing. But I do.
Well, it's actually the calm after the storm, because you've gone through the worst parts of the Dreamlands. Now you're in the better parts. In your rooms, you, of course, immediately find the bathing suits and towels, if you want them.
A nice stripy bathing suit, I hope, 1920s style.
In whatever color you've chosen as your favorite. And the water is cool and fresh and not too cold. And
excellent. And,
little fish in the water tickle you as you're in the water. And
I say.
It's really incredibly pleasant. And since you get the sanity back.
Come in, the water's fine.
I have no desire to expose my body to the elements, thank you.
She gets all blistered in the sun. All right.
Make sure I get back to the train in plenty of time. I don't want to get left behind.
I wouldn't leave without you.
If only I had my camera.
All right. You are now told that the trip to Sun Anil will take only about 2 hours. And that the king will board. You are expected to be on the observation platform when you arrive, dressed up. And that there will be a big banquet tonight with the king, bigger than the other banquets that you've had. So you've
got to dress up and put the old medals on.
You have a couple of hours. So what would you like to do?
Well, as everything we need tends to be in our rooms, I'm going to go into my room, where hopefully I will find bag of golf clubs. And from that bag of golf clubs, I would like to select a mashie niblick, which I'm going to take to the observation deck. And I'm going to spend half an hour or so practicing my golf swing. Just to sort of, it clears my mind.
Okay. Yes.
Very meditative thing to do.
The only thing is, you only have two balls. That sounded funny, but you only have two balls because every single time you whack a ball, the tentacles grab the ball in midair and bring it back. And while they're bringing it back, you whack the second ball, they grab it and they bring it back.
I say, that's rather good, isn't it? I could do with one of those tentacles at home. Save me a fortune.
Yeah, I'm reading up on that book about the Crusades again that we read a little while back. I'm just refreshing myself with that.
That's in the real world.
Isn't it? We don't get any books or anything over here.
If we read
yes, you can find it here because you read it. If you read it.
Oh, I'm.
Oh, I was one of the translators.
Oh, okay.
Me and Keith. Translated
yes,
it because
yeah,
it was in Latin.
Yeah. So it does exist here for you to read.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if I can't find out anything would do for an hour or two.
Okay. Now, Dr. Keith, as you are meditating and hitting balls and going, the landscape outside slowly begins to change. You start to get higher hills and very green hills and more buildings and more little temples up there. And suddenly off in the distance, you see rising up a beautiful city. and it's got all white walls and golden domes, and oddly enough, you realize that's probably not even part of the city you're going to, because now there's another one off in the distance too. These are all large cities, but mostly off in the distance. However, ahead of you, on the way down the tracks, you can see that there is a huge, incredible city filled with golden domes and arabesques, and the walls are all filigreed and beautiful, and it's spectacular. And the closer you get to it, the more beautiful it seems to get. Things don't seem like they could even be built architecturally. Palaces built on tiny little spindly pillars going up, and then all this incredible filigree stuff with this monstrous palace on the top of it. And it's the land of fancy. This is where every dream of beauty sort of resides, and this is the city that is this the city of. You can see groups of people sitting in the grass reading poetry to one another, and you can see, you know, like I say, of animals here and there, and birds of multi-hued colors flying, and this is just an incredible, beautiful place.
Oh, I think I'll just lean on my golf club and take in the view for a while.
Okay, give me just a moment. This is the city of fancy. This is the city that's considered so beautiful and perfect that if you ever leave it voluntarily, you know, after you've lived there, that you'll never find it back. You'll never find your way back. As you are approaching, Mac is like, well, I think this is where I should get off. I think I've got too many responsibilities.
Hey, old chap, I was hoping you'd stay with us a bit longer. Good company.
I don't know. I've just got so many things to do, so many things to go, so many places.
I know, but a small holiday of a day or two isn't going to. Stay, come on, stay with us.
Why don't you do a persuade roll?
No, he hates me.
He doesn't hate you, but he's like, no. I really, really have to. I just have too many burdens. And of course, as he's saying this, the briefcase has turned almost into a suitcase packed with papers. The papers are just pushing their way out. Anybody else want to talk to Mac?
Actually, you want to ask Henry. Those people who decide to stay here, mm-hmm. in the real world, what happens to them? Do they go into a coma and never come out of it?
Well, no, they wake up. They wake up just like you've woken up a few times.
Oh, but every time they would dream, they come back to this place.
If they want to, if they feel ready for it, they come back here, yeah. Mac's been here a few times before.
I mean those who decide to stay permanently.
Oh, just you mean in this city?
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know. I'm not sure they can yet, but they might be able to. If he decides to stay in the city, then he may just wither away and die in the real world. But something tells me that he doesn't want to stay. He wants to get back to the real world. Does anybody want to try and persuade Mackenzie to keep going, to get rid of his burden?
I'm upstairs. So.
I'll give it a try. Although I'm not very persuasive, I'm not, you know.
I'm sort of the mind that maybe this is a good thing for Mac.
Perhaps.
I don't know.
Well, remember that the people who ride on the train have something that keeps them awake at night and ruins their lives. Such things.
So I'll try to persuade him with that, saying that at least you get rid of this burden and always come back here. This could be your sort of respite after you finish ridding yourself of this burden. So I will attempt, and no. 42 out of 30.
Frank, did you want to try, or do you think he should be allowed to do what he wants to do?
Just to clarify, if he did eliminate his burden in the nodens, could he return here? As I understood it, once you can't return.
He can't get back on the train. And there's other modes of transportation in the dreamlands.
Oh, okay. So he could potentially get back here.
Right.
Yeah, then in that case, well... I'll try to persuade him, but I'm not good at it. I could try to charm him. nope. 97.
Charm, I must admit.
Well, you guys try. You give it a valiant effort to try to persuade him to stay, but he's like, no. I really... You feel sorry for him because you realize that he's really oppressed.
By
this stuff. But... Nevertheless, when the train comes to a halt and the platform is extended, he gets off.
Mac, before you leave, mm-hmm. Do you mind sharing where you're a diplomat in so that should we ever meet up in the real world, I could say hello?
Well, sure. I'm in the United States. I work out of Washington, D.C.,
Oh, okay.
I'll shake hands with him before he leaves. It's been a pleasure, sir.
All right. So he shakes your hand and he gets off the train. Now, as you see him getting off the train, and you see that Henry is at the moment busy getting the trade going on. He's trading out the carved jade that he had for spun gold and for little red singing birds and things like that. Off in the distance, I should explain. There's a causeway. The causeway leads away from the train station, and the city on either side is just magnificent. There's just buildings that reach up into the sky that are alabaster white with gold domes on them. And off in the distance, you see this glorious palace, also with gold domes. And you can see at this point that off in the distance, coming from the palace, there is a contingency of soldiers all in splendid, you know, armor, and it's obviously the Frank, king approacheth.
We better get dressed for dinner, Frank. I think they're going to be turning up soon.
Yeah, at this point, you should all put on your best clothes and get ready on the platform.
I'm going to wear my old mess uniform, my old Royal Flying Corps with my medals, my old uniform.
Okay.
I don't wear it very often, so I think I'll do that for tonight.
Number one.
Yeah, I'll get dressed. As a matter of fact, I want something that will match the splendor of the sword that I carry.
Okay. Something, you know. Right.
I shall withdraw to my room and dress in white tie and tails.
Okay. So, Eldridge is, of course, going along with everything. He's not being his usual... argumentative self. He seems to be just quite practically complacent at this point and not arguing with anybody.
Arya did him wrong.
So that's my revenge for not showing up. No, he had a legitimate excuse. All right. The king approaches, and there are a whole bunch of soldiers. The soldiers don't come onto the train. They part. They go to either side. They form a column. Trumpets blare, and King Kouranis appears, and he begins to ascend and come onto the platform. He looks very young, very handsome. Kouranis the First, King of Selophaeus, Saranian, and Uthnagal.
Red haired, looked like Marshal Ney, who served on Napoleon.
All right, so he comes forward, and what's interesting is he has a commanding presence, but at the same time, he seems very familiar, like he seems friendly. How shall I say it? You know, he doesn't seem to be like the Sarnathians. He's not an arrogant fellow. He's just happens to be king.
I should stand at attention and give him a salute at the appropriate time.
And Henry, of course, greets him and welcomes him aboard. And he's like, of course, like, ah, Henry. He says, "You've outdone yourself again. I see you have new guests." And he immediately comes over and he wants to be introduced to all of you. The Sarnathians are there, but he passes the Sarnathians. And he comes over to Frank, and he's like, hello, how are you? And he holds out his hand to shake your hand.
Greetings, Your Honor, and I'll bow.
And he says, oh, you don't need to do that. And he of course, greets Dr. Elizabeth.
How do you do, Your Majesty?
And then Rupert and...
Your Majesty.
Eldridge, Dr. Theo.
Your Majesty.
And he seems very nice. He also gives you sort of a little bit of a wink, because and he whispers to Dr. Dawkins. He says, "You know, I'm just a person like the rest of you."
Well, you say the same thing about the king and queen of England. They're just a person like the rest of us. They're human.
I say, they careful.
Have certain status. I look at you. I'm saying English. Please, careful.
Sorry.
I'm just speaking plainly here. And the dreams, I can't get executed.
In any case, he greets the other people.
Germans.
he greets some of the others, and he makes his way farther into the train, and he's obviously shown to his royal quarters. Only two soldiers come on board with him, and they're like his personal bodyguards. They're dressed splendidly in armor. Let's see. Henry informs you that dinner will be at 8 o'clock. That's in about 3 hours. And that the trip to Saranian will take about 7 hours. So without going into too much side stuff, although we can do some stuff. What happens next is the train, after about 2 hours have gone by in Sonanil, the train begins to leave. Now, when you're in Sonanil, especially up above the docks, which is where the train is, if you look out towards the ocean, there are twin headlands that sort of, one comes up on this side and one comes up on this side. They reach out into the ocean, and they're cliffs, you see. And there comes a point where they sort of act as a protector to the port area. But at a certain point, there's no longer any ground, but they reach out like crystals, and they form a perfect arch like this up above. So everybody has to come underneath the arch. And you can see that there are rainbows in the sky that almost seem to be braided with one another. They seem to defy the laws of what you'd expect in the real world. The train begins moving towards the left headland, and it turns up onto the headland, and you are now flying, or you're now driving up onto the headlands, and you're heading towards the arch. And it takes a couple of minutes to get way out on the arch. You're now way, way above the city, way above the sea. Looking back, you're hundreds and hundreds of feet in the air.
Excellent. I'm loving every second of this.
And you can see the ocean down below, and there are dolphins dancing in the waters and leaping up and following along with the train in the ocean down below. And then you reach the very peak of the archway, and all of the beasts leap in unison, and the train flies up into the air. You, of course, don't feel anything, but the wind is blowing, and you can see that you've left the ground, and they're making one ginormous leap into the air, and you don't even see where they're going because it's 7 hours away. But you're making the leap to Saranian. And it would be absolutely terrifying if it wasn't for the fact that it goes on for hours and hours and hours. And
I'm having a great time looking out the window.
You can also see the sky up above is, you know, you're going into the afternoon. It's about 5 o'clock. The sun is setting. The stars are coming out.
It's like being on an airplane.
It is, yeah. It's like being on an airplane without any noise.
Mm. Yes, this is excellent. This has been ages since I've been this high up.
It reminds me of the time I took a trip on a Zeppelin.
Oh, I'd never been on one of them. I shot at a couple of them, but I never actually got to be on one.
It was terribly exciting.
Okay, after a short period of time, we'll do a little bit before dinner. You get to meet the two knights that are accompanying the king. Once he is settled in his rooms, he asks for some private time, and the knights come out into the lounge where you are.
A casual salute.
They've dressed down. The armor is gone. They've got on court clothing. They introduce themselves as Haragrim and Nuttamins.
Hamilton Smythe, Royal Flying Corps, or RAF as it's called now.
And one is like, flying? You actually can fly, yes?
Pilot, yes, I can fly aircraft, yes.
Oh, yes, I think I have heard of these things, aeroplanes.
Awful good fun. Highly recommend them. Great wings. Nothing better than flying around by yourself, feeling free.
He says, yes, of course we are flying now.
yes, I'm enjoying every second of it. It's been a while since I had a view from up here.
Anyways, they seem like regular nice guys.
I'll give them a drink and sit and chat with them. They're fairly ex-military people, so
all right.
Probably find something in common.
Is there anything you'd like to do before the royal feast?
Well, I think it's probably an apposite occasion for a cocktail.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Given that we're in the Dreamlands, I assume there's no limitation. And I think as we're flying in through the air, I think I'll have an aviation.
What's an aviation?
It's I can't remember exactly what it was. I know it's Jim and Creme de Violette.
Sounds interesting. Sounds sweet.
Very floral.
Mm. All right, so...
Can I ask Henry a question?
Yes.
I'm sort of pulling him to the side. Henry, I've heard talk recently about rubies, gems, and so forth.
Yes, sir.
How does one come about getting such a thing in the Dreamlands?
In the case of myself, one would find certain services. I transport a lot of goods across the land. But for the most part, I don't have much need of them. I suppose very much the same way that you would acquire money in our world.
Okay. I was just curious if that's not the sort of thing that you could create using the vert?
Using vert? Possibly. If you dream hard enough, you might be able to do this.
Would it be considered real? Because I've heard talk of... Well, yeah, let's just say I've heard talk that you can possibly bring things back.
Ah, I see what you're trying. You're attempting to bring something back into the real world.
For my wife. Just a token.
That is sometimes possible. There are especially certain places in the Dreamlands where it's possible to take things back with you. It's not always... It doesn't always work. You can try.
Okay. That's not considered illegal or against the rules, or I don't want to get in trouble.
I'm not sure that there are such rules.
Okay.
Is it true what I've heard, that there are places, some places that exist both here in the Dreamlands and in the waking world?
Yeah, I believe that's true, although they are dangerous places. The farther down into the ground you go, the closer you get to the edge of the Dreamlands. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but the ghouls seem to be able to pass between the Dreamlands and the real lands.
Yes, I wonder. They want to.
Our friend Guillaume, for instance, you said that you saw him in the real world.
Yes, the others said that they encountered him in Paris, I believe it was.
It's also debatable, my friend, whether what you think of as material reality is really what it is, because you are here, and the person who is here is you.
Well, I suppose that philosophers would argue that if our reality is shaped by our perception, and then we perceive ourselves in the dreamland, then while we're here, that this is indeed our reality, isn't it?
Indeed. Now, I know only from what I have read that it's not a good thing to die here. If you die here, you wake up, but you probably will never get back here. It is the trauma.
I see.
And if there's anything else you'd like to know or what I can answer, I don't know everything.
I know that Guillaume, the ghoul, is in the
yes,
describe it as the chamber.
Yes.
Are passengers allowed to visit with him? Is that permissible?
If you would like to, yes. Oh. I would tell you to be cautious. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
The only one I would not recommend visiting is the madman. Of course, your Eldridge has tried to visit him and bore no fruits. He is completely insane. We will have the king decide what to do with him. Probably he will be taken to a place where he can be at least somewhat at peace. I I would not want him to jump into the Gulf of Nodens.
No.
He would probably awaken, and we don't know. Well, I suppose if he was lucky enough that he'd wake up and not remember anything. But he might be completely stark raving mad when he wakes up.
Would there be any risk of him bringing any malign influence back to the waking world with him?
Only himself. If he is completely insane, he might be violent. It's impossible to tell what's happened to the poor man. I'm hoping that with time, in a peaceful place, that he will recover at least some of his rationale.
Well, given the difference in the passage of time between here and the waking world, I would imagine this is the perfect place for him to rehabilitate.
I agree.
I think I might like to visit the Guillaume, but obviously not until we've dined with the king. It would be rude to leave before an official engagement.
Okay.
A little later.
So shall we jump ahead to the banquet?
Yes.
All right. So a little bit before 8 o'clock, of course, everybody assembles in the dining chamber. Now the dining chamber is completely transformed. This is a royal dining chamber. It's huge, amazingly huge.
Good evening.
Everyone is present except for the Ibians. Although you are told that after dinner they will be joining you because the king is going to hear what you all have to say. Which makes me wish that Eldridge was here. In any case, let's see. What is for dinner tonight? Potage à la reine, the soup of the king, which happens to be cream of chicken soup. Nothing fancy. Braised flamingo tongues with truffles from the eastern fungus forest. Haunches of royal venison from the slopes of Mount Larian. A pair of roast peacocks from the hills of Implans, dressed in their feathers, served upon golden platters with rubies and diamonds, set with rubies and diamonds. A castle of sponge sugar in the shape of Saranian, where you're going. Fruits, nuts, spices from the Sidarathian groves, sauces prepared by the subtlest cook suited to the palate of every feaster. Drinks include pearls from wave-washed Matal, dissolved in the vinegar of Thrace, and the wines of Sarub and Plans, Carthian Hills, and Mount Aran, and of course, Zug Moon Tree wine.
Excellent.
Always on the menu.
I should hope so.
I say that's a bit of a slap-up feast, isn't it?
Oh, going to be able to do the top bunch after that one.
Jolly good nosebag, what?
King Coronis, of course, is there. He arrives with his two loyal knights. They attend the feast. The beginning of the feast, the beginning of the banquet, is very stiff and formal. Eventually, you start to think, you know, it's kind of boring. Nothing much is going on. It's very, very stiff. Do you guys want to do anything or have any suggestions?
Well, I'll do my best to make polite small talk with whomever is seated next to me.
Another okay. glass of wine, I might make a speech.
Oh boy! Remember what I said about dying in the Dreamlands.
I'm poised to control Rupert if necessary, as always.
don't keep somebody else to tell them.
you're there. Karakov is there. Madame Bonneval is there. Zusha is sitting next to Dr. Dawkins. Mackenzie has already left. And the Cernathians are there, of course. They're all seated at one side of the table.
They're not giving me dirty looks at all, are they?
No. Zusha sort of leans over to Dr. Dawkins and says, but perhaps we should have some entertainment. She
says. What do you have in mind?
Well, I could dance. I've danced before kings before.
All right.
So she says, like, would you like introduce me? Or
yes, yes. And so I'll get up, and I am not good at introducing anybody, but you know, I will ask for everyone's attention. I say, in honor of our, you know, of the king. Mm-hmm. Young Zusha here would like to perform a dance, and I'll say this is the dance of the kings or something like that. I'll come up with some flowery language or something to...
Well, you start to realize, too, that as you're approaching, you're approaching the end of your trip, the end of the whole thing, the Gulf of Nodens, and she's going to give up her dancing. She's going to dance like she's never danced before. This is her, the end of her career, as she puts it. And so she dances, and there's a beauty to her dancing and a sadness because of what she's about to do, and there, but it's beautiful. It's incredible and beautiful, her dancing. And the king is quite pleased with the whole thing.
I wipe away it here.
Would you like to do anything else before the end? Before we move on to the sort of trial?
Oh yeah, you said the end. That sounds ominous, but.
Well, I didn't mean it like that. I just meant the end of the meal.
No. Oh, okay. All right.
Sure.
Nothing I can think of. Definitely standing ovations to Zusha.
All right.
I'd like to raise my glass very subtly and give a friendly nod and a knowing glance to Madame Beauval.
Yeah, and she's actually kind of she likes Zusha too, because she's a woman who does what she wants. All right, so. Afterwards, there are a number of matters that need to be brought before the king. And the first one is going to be the case of the Cernathians and the Ibians. And the Ibians are brought into the room. And now we'll assume that dinner has been cleared and most of the guests have left, except for you guys. The Ibians are brought in, and you can see almost immediately, you know, the smell. The king is kind of like, the things I have to deal with being the king. The unpleasant things. Anyways, they come in, and Henry says... the Cernathians and the Ibians wish to discuss the situation as you have commanded them to appear. However, they have been arbitrating with one another. Our friends, Dr. Dawkins and Eldridge, have assisted. And the king says, would you like to explain what the situation is to us?
Well, I'll start off by letting the Ibians explain their grievance to the Cernathians. And once that's done with, I will explain to the king that an agreement could be met and this hostility could be over if the Sarnathians are willing to return a holy relic to the Ibians.
And what judgment did you come? Conclusion did you come to in your discussion with them?
Well, this these Sarnathians seem half-hearted to oblige them. They are seem unwilling to return this statue, this relic, to the Ibians.
And of course, Eldridge gives his side of that. But we'll just assume that he gives his side,
which should mirror my side because he and I are on the same side, basically.
If I can have a discreet word with Dr. Dawkins, is he going to mention the bribery attack, the perversion of the cause of justice?
I will. See, the problem with that is if I bring it up, they can simply deny it, and it would be my word versus theirs. And then we wouldn't need proof. And we don't have all the time in the world for that. And since they haven't been assassinated on their way to see the king, we should be fine. The king is here now, so...
Right. All right, well... after the king hears both sides of the argument, he says, all right, hear now what I have to say. I ruled that the Ibians did nothing to provoke the attacks on their people. And that that the Sarnathians should provide reparations to the Ibians in the form of the jewels they have requested. There should be a formal apology, and they should return their sacred statue. Whether or not either group is still alive, the Sarnathians must comply and return these things to the place where the city of Ib used to be. And the Sarnathians sort of bow, you know, like this. But you guys can do a psychology roll if you want. You're all muted.
Passed with a 13.
I failed.
Okay. Well, you don't buy it. You still don't buy that the Sarnathians are being honest about it. They were willing to murder the others. In which case, the king then dismisses them. And as the Sarnathians are leaving, of course, they back out of the room. You don't turn your back on the king. As they're backing out of the room and they're leaving, the king falls silent for a moment. You can see that he's watching them leave. And once they've gone, he just is like, he shakes his head no. And he's like, you can tell people to do things, but stubbornness and arrogance are things that you just can't always overcome. He says, what they should understand is there are many gods in the dreamlands, and not all of them are content with tactful prayers. Just because something is forgotten does not necessarily mean that it no longer exists. Their fate is in their own hands now. Mm. And then he turns to you and he's like, thank you very much for assisting in this. You, of course, didn't have to, but the Ibians asked and you complied. I think that's very admirable. He says, quite honestly, you know, and now the Ibians have left. He says, just because they're quite honestly repulsive doesn't mean that they should not be treated with respect.
Respect, correct. right.
And he's like, all right, now there seems to be something of a murder charge.
Yes.
And they bring...
I'm sorry. Go on.
They bring Moronimer in, and there is a contingency of cats. I am also told that you were instrumental in locating the perpetrator. Is there anything that you'd like to say for him?
Well, I'll explain the entire situation. I'll also explain that he was being controlled by some sorcerer that we've come across. So his actions, while he committed the murder, these actions were more or less controlled by this other third party. So I don't know how you would judge this. He's not completely innocent from this. It was his hand that slain Ghost, but it wasn't by his will. It was by another's. He was merely the instrument.
Yes. How well do you know this Moronimer? Are you a friend of his, somebody who's known him for a while?
No. And actually, if we're seated in this room, I'm seated next to the cats. If right. Moronimer is across from us, he's on that other side. I'm sitting. So there's a clear recognition of where I sit in this particular.
Right.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, no, that doesn't make any sense. All right, never mind. So the king thinks about it, and he says, this is my judgment in this case. I think that this would be the best way to handle it. Moronimer shall be returned to Uther, where he will stand trial according to the laws of the cats, because one cannot deny, he in fact does not deny himself, that he was the instrument by which the cat Ghost was killed. The rule in Uther is no man shall kill a cat. No one shall kill a cat. He killed a cat. Therefore, he comes under their judgment. However, I understand that they do have within their laws contingencies for those who are being controlled by alien entities or wizards or whatever. So I will ask the cats to show clear judgment and not to be too harsh. Certainly not to invoke the death penalty. It's not warranted here. And the cats agree, and Moronimer was already willing to go back with them. All right. So once again, the king commends you for your assistance. And he's quite impressed with your abilities to discuss these sort of things. Whenever you return to the Dreamlands, if you do, feel free to visit me in Celephaeus, and I will aid you in any way that I can. You have the favor of the court. You can all roll 1d4 for sanity adding. You can go beyond your original.
One exciting point of sanity.
Rupert won't make a sanity bonus thing because he hasn't done an awful lot to earn it, really, because he's just, yeah, so I won't be rolling because I already had the game earlier.
Okay. All right. So we have a few hours before we arrive in Saranian, the Cloud City. What's that? I didn't hear what you said, Simon.
I said cards. I just rip its answer for everything, but there's a gap in the procedure cards.
If I'm still there with the king, I will ask him. You know, since I heard that he is this master dreamer, how does one become better at dreaming?
Well, part of it is luck. He said, ever since I was a small child, I somehow managed to be coming to the Dreamlands. And I seemed to be able to come here almost every single time that I fell asleep. And I just acquired the knowledge as I went along. By the time I was in my teens, I was learning, as you have, to manipulate the Dreamlands. Quite honestly, I don't look like this in the real world. He sort of leans forward and smiles. He says, I've chosen to look quite young and quite handsome the way I did when I was a child. But in fact, I'm about 75 years old in the real world.
Okay.
And it's only been for the last 20 years that I actually had any real power here in the Dreamland. So it was after many, many years of coming here that I gained this kind of power. And I built the cities, and I organized the people, and I'm the king.
And it seems you rule fairly as well.
It is my hope, since I exercise considerable power here, that when the time comes for my body to die in the real world, that I can stay here and continue to rule. But I am still alive in the real world.
So I'll ask him, since he's been here for the longest, has he heard of anything like this sorcerer, this creature that we've come across?
There is a long, long old legend. I've read it actually even in the real world about the old crone and the wizard and their fight because the wizard killed her children, her daughter. He says, I don't recall the whole story any longer. It's been so long, but perhaps you've heard of it. I think you have read it, haven't you? Early on?
Did we? I think we did. In the real world, yeah. So we should have access to it in our rooms.
It's kind of a perpetual thing. They go on and on and on. But Madame Bonneval has never gone all the way to the Gulf of Nodens. I think their dispute's been going on for hundreds of years. Anyways, any more questions?
I'll let you get rest and relax, Your Majesty.
Well, GM's talking now. If you guys have any more questions or things you want to discuss, the next stop is Saranian. And I need Thomas here for Saranian, because that's the last stop before you guys go on.
I'd like to visit Guillaume.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You want to go visit Guillaume?
Yes.
All right. You go to the place where Guillaume is, the subterranean room, and Guillaume has an air about him of, there's kind of a smell of decay. He's dressed in an old French uniform, quite damaged, but he speaks French. Do you speak French?
No. Which is ridiculous.
I do if you need a translator. I speak French if you need a translator.
I'm a middle-aged, well-born English woman. I should speak French. I haven't put that down. If you wouldn't mind translating for me, Rupert.
Be my pleasure, Keith. Be my pleasure.
Having secured a translator.
Guillaume is quite alarming. He's like a dog person, but he's obviously old. He's got cuts and bruises, and he's got a scar across one eye, and that's how Eldridge recognized
him. Uniform is Grand Armée of Napoleon, isn't it?
Yes.
Old guard?
Oui, monsieur.
I hope you don't mind us bothering you like this, monsieur.
No, monsieur. No, madame.
It's just I was I've been wondering for quite some time. I had a question, and I wondered if perhaps you might shed some light on the topic for me. I've been told on a number of occasions now that your people have the ability to physically cross over between the waking world and the dreamlands. And I was just wondering if you could explain to me how you achieved this. Is there a procedure, or is it just certain places that meet between the two worlds?
Without acting it all out, he kind of explains that when he was seen by the others in the catacombs themselves are not one of those places. That the only way he could find his way back here was by falling asleep. And that's what he was trying to do. He was trying to go back to sleep when they bothered him. There are, however, places deep, deep down in the ground. The ghouls live in a kind of... It's kind of gross. They eat dead human beings. They tend to live underneath cemeteries. They come up underground and get into the coffins from below after they've been buried. And some of the things he says are very crude and disturbing, that if the body's fresh or young, it's very tender. But sometimes the old ones delicious too, kind of like beef jerky. And he tends, as he's talking about this, you can see that he's sort of slathering. He's sworn that he would give this up, but he can't help but be incredibly tempted by the delicious flavor of human flesh. So you can do a sanity roll.
I'll try and turn it down as much as I can. I'll bet do a sanity roll as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Three.
Oh, 05.
We're made of sterner stuff than
excellent. That. Yeah. Well, you've gotten kind of a nude to the weird. So
there's no shame in being yourself, man. There's.
anyways, he's very tired. He didn't want to be a ghoul in the first place. But better to answer your question, he says he has heard that there are a number of places. There are a number of cemeteries. That there are mausoleums that have secret passages that lead down into the dreamlands. There's a place far, far to the north where there used to be a city that supposedly has a passageway to the dreamlands.
Why has it been held in the train for?
He wants to go to the Gulf of Nodens and throw himself into it. He wants to stop existing because he's tired of being what he is. He explains that when he was in the army, they were starving, and he was told that what he was eating was, you know, rabbit, but it wasn't rabbit. It was people.
Yeah. It was Moscow. We treat from Moscow.
Okay. and as a result, he became a good. Cool.
So he became a ghoul against his...
Right. And he's... He says for the first part of it, he was driven by his by necessity, by his need to kill and eat, or to eat what was dead. But over the years, he's regretted it, and now he's forced himself to stop, and as a result, he doesn't heal. He's he's emaciated and he can't die, but he's hoping that if he throws himself into the Gulf of Nodens, then it'll all be over, finally.
Tragic tale.
That's right. Bad egg.
But he was a good soldier, he said.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, it wasn't your fault. You didn't know, did you?
He tries to tell you a couple tales from when he was, but he doesn't remember very well. He almost doesn't remember the French language anymore because he hasn't used it for so long. But the more he talks to you, the more it sort of comes back to him.
Yeah.
You know.
Merci beaucoup.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for your time. It's very kind of you to talk to us. I hope you get what you want.
Yeah. Well, wish him peace.
We shall live.
It's a damn shame, man.
Do we get any subsequent increase in dream lore for knowing this?
Yes. You can go ahead and I want you to roll a skill roll for dream lore. And if you fail it, you may roll.
Like an education roll.
Okay. Right. I'll give that to all of you.
No, I've actually passed that. So I guess he's just really confirmed something that I suspected, so I don't get a...
Right, no additional. But in general, anytime you return to the Dreamlands after this, you can roll a 10-sided dice to add information.
So a fail is what we want, right?
A fail is what you want, right.
And then you said, what, D10?
D10.
Got 99. Oh, and a 10.
Excellent. So you're getting really smart about the Dreamlands.
Is that dreaming or dream lore?
Dream lore.
Okay. Yeah, my dream lore is pretty good.
You've also noticed some weird things. I've pointed it out before, but you sometimes seem to know things that you don't know how you knew them. Like the Bayaki. How did you know that?
Hmm.
You know that you've never heard that word before, but somehow you just knew.
Which I wanted to ask you about that. Should that count towards Cthulhu Mythos, or would that just be Dreamlands, Dreamlore?
We'll leave it at Dreamlore for now.
Okay.
Yeah, because everything here is freaking made up,
yeah,
as far as you know.
Right.
You don't know that any of it's real.
Some crazy person must have dreamed up the idea of a Bayaki.
Right. Maybe that evil wizard fellow. So anyways, if you have no more questions... But I'm willing to entertain because it's only 7:47. But
I don't get any initial Cthulhu Mythos or anything for having just chatted with a ghoul.
Once again, so
asking because it's kind of my first encounter with an actual Mythos creature.
You didn't see it in the real world, so I think that since you didn't see it in the real world, now if you see one in the real world, then I would say yes.
Okay.
Because still, this is just a dream, isn't it? You know, there's that nagging.
Well, yeah, especially since I only have the word of the other members of the group that these things exist in the real world.
That they met him, yeah.
But he could just be a product of their dreams.
Maybe, yeah. All that's possible.
I don't really know. Oh, it's terribly confusing here. Still the cocktail tonight.
Okay, anything more, or shall we end it at that point? Because next we have the Gulf of Nodens.
Oh, goodness.
I don't know. I feel like I want to...
We're doomed.
I want to help Rupert along with his speech.
I'm in charge with the idea of realized hot air balloons. I can't make an aircraft, but I can make a hot air balloon. And that's my current fascination for tonight after my brandy.
Hot air balloons.
Yeah, hot air balloons. This is a bit fits.
It's a question of whether you would be able to manufacture something here out of the existing materials. So it's like you could always sew together a bunch of ladies' underwear and make a giant balloon and light a fire underneath it.
I'll stick with the train for now.
My guess is that something like that would actually work. The problem would be you manufacture a gun, because where would you find the iron? Where would you smelt it? Where, you know, all of those things would, well, you'd be able to. I don't know. That's
probably make those early clay pot cannons that the Chinese had. They're hundreds and hundreds of years old.
Maybe, yeah.
If the secret gunpowder's all in there.
All right.
That's assuming you can get the ingredients of gunpowder. And is there sulfur? Yeah. Well, there's probably sulfur.
That's another question. There might not be saltpeter and sulfur and existing yet in this world.
Because I was thinking that. I was wondering what, chemistry-wise, if it's available in dreamlands, if it's available
the same laws of physics apply?
Some things obviously don't. They can be twisted. There's no way that those palaces could actually be on those spindly little legs without collapsing.
Oh, like common laws of gravity. No. And a train's flying by itself without any wings.
That's true. All right, well, let's call it there. Our players included Mick Swan, Simon Ward, Jeff Wilkins, and Wayne Worthy, with myself as the Keeper of the Secrets. We're currently producing 4 shows a week, with music and sound effects added in post-production in order to create a richer listener experience. We provide audio-only versions of our shows free for you to download from Podbean or iTunes. If you're enjoying our broadcast, please consider visiting our Patreon account. Your contributions help us to offset time and money spent organizing and maintaining our gaming venue. Feel free to send us comments on the show. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed our broadcast, please give us a thumbs up and subscribe to our channel for updates on our latest shows. You'll find links to everything I mentioned in the description below. This is Tom Raley inviting you to journey with us once again into the darkness for another adventure into the universe of H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Until next time, good luck and good gaming. Thank you.